We're speaking with U.S. Senator and former Newark Mayor Cory Booker. Senator, before we get into what you talked about this week with the report, take us inside your head for a moment. How has this coronavirus pandemic impacted you personally?
So I have been hunkered down in my home in Newark, abiding by the dictates of the governor, really only leaving to do some events with him from time to time, but doing most of my work from here in my office, which is 24/7, kind of all hands on deck. All my office team is working around the state, but from home. So it's been a challenging time for all, but for me, I found it in many ways a chance to up my, frankly, productivity. There's something about getting up early in the morning and being able to do all your work from one place. It's actually allowed me to stay very connected across the state, meeting with mayors and county leaders, and from everything from nonprofit heads to individual businesses, and just every day trying to help while at the same time being able to be involved in the many negotiations in Washington to get New Jersey the resources it needs.
Now, you know as well as I do that more than 400 people have died in Newark and many more in Essex County. What are some of the stories that you're hearing about the families losing loved ones?
You know, it is extraordinarily painful. One of the more difficult challenges is just making condolence call after condolence call to everyone from families of first responders that we've lost in our area to frontline medical folks, all the way to just families who lost folks. This is a very dark time, and it's a time, unfortunately, that even our grief can't get the thoroughness that is merited because of our being socially distanced from one another. And so it is really one of those times where we need to do our sort of official acts, you know, working here in Newark to help set up feeding operations and all those practical things, but we cannot shrink from the challenge this is for our own all mental health and emotional well-being. And it really calls for all of us to be towards each other pastoral in a sense, because I think this is a moment that reminds us all that we need each other, that we're interwoven in spirit with each other. And I'm hoping, as I've seen around Newark, frankly, and around the state, that people will rise to this time and be more loving and be more gracious and be more engaged with one another.
So let's talk about this report that you discussed this week showing the health disparities and the pandemic's disproportionate effect on communities of color. Access to health care, living situations, economic status, all factors. What do you feel can be done to turn this around?
Well, I think there's two layers to this. One is the urgency of the now. When you have, a street with a house fire, that you've got to attribute more water resources to that fire. And we definitely have pockets in our nation, from nursing homes to the Navajo Nation, which is right behind New York and New Jersey in the number of cases. We've got to make sure that active community get the health resources that the level of the crisis merit. And that means here in Newark and beyond around our state, making sure that access to health care and health care services, access to testing as well, all of these things are really important. And there's some very practical things on the national level that should have been done by now, like opening up a special enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act. Because even people who had insurance in their jobs, if you've lost your job, they're paying extensive COBRA and potentially facing falling off of health insurance, which this is the time the president should make a simple decision. If it's been a health crisis where more people are dying in the Vietnam War, this is not a time to open up special enrollment periods when it is. And so there's a lot of things that have to be done now to help stabilize this crisis, so health-wise as well as economically. A fairer apportionment of small business resources, expanding forbearance for everything from student loans to rental payments to mortgages, just to get us through this crisis until we can start talking about the bigger needs we need to do to address the endemic injustices in our country that are so visited upon particularly minority communities. And we have these Superfund sites. All of these things that have been pushed into Newark, or that toxins that exist in Newark, have made our asthma rate 3-4 times higher than wealthier suburban towns around New Jersey. And that is even worse because a black child with asthma complications will die at about 10 times the rate of a white child with asthma complications because of a host of access issues and treatment issues. These are things that we have to address as a country. We should have felt that urgency before the kind of crisis we're seeing right now. And I'm praying that we come out of this crisis with expanded levels, circles of empathy and compassion, of greater moral imagination, and a greater sense of moral urgency to do what's necessary to address those disparities then.
You also talked about the small businesses, especially those owned by people of color, and maybe their connections with banks aren't as tight as they can be. How can that work so they can get more of the money to really address the problems that they're facing?
So, as the report details, you know, African-American businesses are more likely to start without banking relationships. They have less cash reserves, less often as a result of that and more. And there are very practical things we can do. Democrats got a lot of criticism when Mitch McConnell brought to the floor just to re-up the PPP as it was, the Paycheck Protection Program. And Democrats said no. And we had a standoff on the Senate floor until McConnell agreed to segment a $60 billion portion of those funds targeted toward the underbanked communities, which are many people, frankly, but resources were made available for community development financial institutions, made available for minority banks and more to make sure there was a more equitable distribution to small businesses, minority businesses, nonprofits, churches, and more. So that was a step in the right direction. But I have a bipartisan bill that we're working on for this next package that will go even further than that and partner with a lot of locally run organizations. Like in New Jersey, we have development corporations that are even more connected. From Chicago to Atlanta, there are local community-based organizations often run through the government that make loans and resources available. Standing up them would be a great further step in the right direction, and I'm glad to be leading on this in the Senate with Republican allies.
So you mentioned with Republican allies. Has the coronavirus outbreak divided us more politically, or has it united us, in your opinion?
Look, I went down to the Senate really with the understanding that I wasn't representing Democrats in New Jersey. I was just trying to deliver for New Jersey and have built a really good relationship on the other side of the aisle that have helped me get a lot done. For example, when the first responder we lost, well, one of the first was a man in Israel, firefighter in Faith, and I went right to Chuck Grassley and said, you know, can we make sure that any first responder that dies to COVID virus, that there's a presumption that it was a line of duty death, which gives their children and their widows a lot more resources. And Chuck Grassley stepped right up, and we are advancing that bill. I think we'll get it done very soon. And so I'm finding a lot of just picking up the phone, calling my colleagues to work on a lot of elements of this problem that I think will advance the cause. That said, I will have to say, as a guy who watched everybody from Giuliani, low approval ratings, but rise to the occasion in the immediacy of 9/11, Chris Christie, I can write a dissertation on our disagreement, but when Hurricane Sandy hit, he and I were in lockstep in issues of recovery, and he rose to that occasion. I am stunned that we have a president right now that has turned what should have been an opportunity for leadership, New Zealand and Australia, conservative leader and a liberal leader, both of whom their approval ratings have shot up, they rose to the occasion. But we seem to have a president who's falling in approval rating as he continues to divide this country, demean and degrade everybody from journalists to Democrats, as opposed to calling us for a common cause against a common foe. And in fact, he's falling back in time to a day when we had the Articles of Confederation by telling the states that they're on their own, compete against each other, as we see governors often driving up the price of critical resources because we don't have a national mobilization, coordination, and fair apportionment of resources. So the partisanship from the White House has been stunning to me and disappointing to me. So my philosophy is always not to curse the darkness, but really try to be a light worker. And I feel blessed that in the Senate, at least, despite some of my frustrations with Mitch McConnell, saying things like let states go bankrupt and talking about blue state bailout, which is just outright racist, obnoxious, and unacceptable. But a lot of the rank-and-file Republican peers of mine, we found ways to forge unity on issues during this crisis.
Last question for you. You know, it's so odd for me to be speaking to you from my home and you being in Newark there, and you've listened to this radio station for so long. Who's the first person you're going to hug outside your family once this is all over, and why?
I'll tell you, my chief staff, his name is Matt Clapper, and the reason why I'm dying to give him a hug is because during this crisis, working for me around the clock, he went back to being an EMT, riding on ambulances around Union County, where he lived in Summit, because the numbers of our EMT members was shrinking to dangerously low, where we might not be able to respond as rapidly. And so this guy has been one of those quiet heroes, like so many of our first responders, segregated himself and his wife and his newborn child to do that. And it's people like him and the others I've seen around Newark organizing, food deliveries to families falling through the cracks, often immigrant families who aren't recipients of some of the benefits that we are in Congress were able to secure. Just so many heroes. But I'll hug Matt first if he's close by. But as you know, and you've been a recipient of these, I'm a hugger. And this has probably been the longest I've gone without any kind of, because I'm living alone. My significant other is in California with her two parents who have medical needs. So I'm just looking forward to being able to get back to a point where we can do human contact, which is so important for, I think, nurturing our souls. And I appreciate that. You might have to suffer through a hug the first time I see you as well.
Thanks so much, Senator. We appreciate your time. Continue success in fighting for New Jersey, and we'll talk to you soon. Stay healthy.
And one last shout out. We know that art is not a luxury. It's a necessity. And so much of jazz and blues, so much of what I listen to on your radio station has been nurturing to the soul of the nation. You're listened to all around the country and all around the world. I just want to let you know that my agenda is to continue to fight for the art, because if anything has shown us in this crisis, it's how critical the arts are to sustaining life through crisis, in fact, for inspiring us in dark times. So thank you and all those at WBGO for continuing to be light in dark times and sustenance and inspiration to us all.
Thanks, Senator. We'll talk to you soon.